To be sure, these were on the whole dark and pessimistic times, but the spirit of the worse the better served as a wind behind liberals eager to remake the world, to end the days of drift and inaugurate the era of progressive mastery. Stealing Fascist Thunder. Herbert Hoover won the presidential contest of 1928 in no small part on the strength of the international craze for economic planning and collectivization. He was a self-made millionaire, but his chief appeal was his experience as an engineer. In the 1920s and 1930s, it was widely believed that engineering was the highest calling, and it was hoped that engineers could clear political mountains the same way they moved real ones. Hoover failed to deliver as the great engineer, ironically because he gave the people too much of what they wanted. Indeed, many economic historians concede that the New Deal was, in significant respects, an accelerated continuation of Hoover's policies, rather than a sharp break from them. The lines are even blurrier when one notes that FDR went into office as a budget balancer who cut government pay. Of course, the New Deal was an even greater failure when it came to curing the Great Depression, but Roosevelt had something going for him that Hoover did not, in appreciation of the fascist moment. Just as progressivism constituted a definite international moment during the second decade of the 20th century, so in the 1930s the Western world was riding through a storm of collectivist sentiments, ideas, and trends. In Switzerland, Holland, Belgium, and Finland, quasi-fascist parties received their highest share of the votes. Until 1934, it seemed possible that Oswald Mosley, founder of the British Union of Fascists, who, like Mussolini, always considered himself a man of the left, might occupy 10 Downing Street. Meanwhile, in the United States, National Socialists or Populist Progressives, such as Huey Long and Father Coughlin, were hugely popular, and they, more than any other group, moved the political center of gravity in America to the left. This is as good a place as any to tackle the enduring myth that Long and Coughlin were conservatives. It is a bedrock dogma of all enlightened liberals that Father Charles Coughlin was an execrable right-winger. Long is a more complicated case, but whenever his legacy is portrayed negatively, he's characterized as right-wing. Whenever he's a friend of the people, he's a left-winger. Again and again, Coughlin is referred to as the right-wing radio priest, whom supposedly insightful essayists describe as the ideological grandfather of Rush Limbaugh, Pat Buchanan, Ann Coulter, and other putative extremists. But Coughlin was in no meaningful way a conservative or even a right-winger. He was a man of the left in nearly all significant respects. Born in 1891 in Hamilton, Ontario, Coughlin was ordained as a priest in 1916. He taught at Catholic schools in Canada for 7 years and then moved to Michigan.